Hello.
Okay. Hi, everyone.
Thank you for coming.
Maybe turn on the PC. Like me.
No, it's dead.
Oh, now it's working. Oh.
Is there another thing?
Oh.
Yeah, it works.
We're going to record, and after we will discuss posting it on YU Torah. So I would like to request that everyone not record it, if that's okay. Right, we're recording it, right?
Just making sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's first off, and I would like to introduce our panelists, our very wonderful experts in this field. We have Dr. Alana Barry, who is our psychologist, one of the psychologists at the YU Counseling Center. She's wonderful. Get to know her. We're very lucky to have her.
Thank you.
We also have Mrs. Malky Galler, who is a connector for, is that the right term?
Right.
Connector for YU Connects. She is our representative from YU Connects, and we are blessed to have her here. We also have a very special Rav with us that I happen to know very well. His name is Rabbi Aaron Cement, and he is the Rav of Congregation Ari Zeta Rome. He's a Rebbe in YU. He's a Mashgiach and a very special person. So I was dating him while I was in this room. So that's just a small piece of information. Anyway, so without further ado, I'm going to start with the first question. Can everybody hear? Okay, great. Yeah?
It's a little quiet.
You can move up.
Do you want to move up?
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody can move up. And by the way, guys, you can move your chairs up also. Like, we don't need to be... Okay? If anybody wants to come closer, please come. Like, push your chairs. Okay. So the first question is, how do you start the process of shidduch dating? In part B, that you can choose to answer or not, is what should I do if I'm not getting any dates and I've met with a lot of shidduchim? So the basic overall is, how do you start the process of shidduch dating?
Okay, let's start with Mrs. Galler.
Okay, Malky.
Malky.
Okay. First of all, thank you for inviting me. It's really an honor and a pleasure to be here. I have personally went to Stern, and I have not been in this room in probably 25 years, but I really feel like I'm about to take a bio final, so I'm just like, I have a little bit of like pachad in my heart right now. But okay, so just in terms of getting started in shidduchim, I would say that getting started in shidduchim is like job hunting. You know, you have to look at a lot of different avenues. And shadchanim, like it says, like if you met with shadchanim and you're not getting any ideas, they're not the end-all be-all. Just like if you're job hunting, you're going to ask your friends, you're going to do a lot of different networking that, you know, in order to find the right job for you. So, you know, of course, there is always that underlying element of emuna and bitachon, and that's something that I'm sure Rabbi Simon could talk about. But sitting at home and doing nothing and hoping that he falls from the sky is not really the right way to go about it either. So I came up with 5 practical tips. Okay, so shadchanim are not the answer, and I'm talking as shadchan, and these are 5 things that you can do on your own. So firstly, the role of parents is really important in this process, and in terms of networking, I understand very much that a lot of parents may not have grown up in the world where shidduch dating was a norm, and they may say things like, in my day, we met on our own, or I don't know how to do this, or this is too embarrassing for me, it's not my way. So I tell the parents, and you can this is something you can tell your parents, make it into like a funny thing, you know, just like, I don't know how the kids do things these days, like there's the internet now, there's shidduchim now, and you know, my daughter told me that this is what I have to do. When I go to a simcha, I have to say that I have a single daughter, so here's her resume, this is what I'm supposed to do. Like, kind of make it into a funny thing. And I think that a lot of parents, even the parents that don't do this, or aren't in this world, can really joke about it, and everyone could kind of turn that into like a funny thing. So parents can, you know, network at simchas, they can call their high school friends, and you know, they all have kids the same age. The second thing, so number 2 would be speak to friends. Friends are a great resource. They know people. They're good at networking. They may know, you know, maybe their next door neighbor, maybe their cousin. But when you're speaking to friends, I think that's something that you need to think about if you're not getting dates, is maybe some of your friends that are your references may need a little bit of coaching. So you may need to say to your friend, I want to make sure that when someone's calling you, you're saying what I want you to say. You're not, you know, someone may say, like, does she want to live in Israel? And the friend's like, the friend's not necessarily giving the right answer. So make sure that your friend is on the same page as you. And especially your friend who's on a reference for you needs to be someone that's articulate and needs to be someone that's easy to reach. So they don't have to be your best friend from first grade. They have to be someone who's going to be excited to talk about you. Oh my goodness, you know, you're calling about Chaya Schwartz. I love Chaya. Like, that's the person that you want on your resume. Third, people say Mishaneh Makom, Mishaneh Mazal. Shadchanim say Mishaneh Tmuna, Mishaneh Mazal. When you change your picture, your mazel somehow changes. And I encourage, you know, girls and guys to maybe, if they, and I know Rabbi Cement has a different opinion about this, I heard your shir, and, you know, I encourage girls, if you're getting dressed for Shabbos, you're going to a simcha, snap a picture. The shadchan doesn't have to send it to the boy. But the shadchan sometimes, like, if you send a new picture, sometimes, like, a new idea pops into her mind. It's just a different, I don't know, you just see a different, like, I remember somebody sent me a picture that maybe like a week or two ago, and she was like, she had a guitar in her room behind her, and I was like, oh, you play guitar? My goodness, I just spoke to this boy that's so, like, said that he would love a girl that's musically inclined. It just, like, made that shidduch go, and the only reason I thought of it is because I saw something new in her. So that's, you know, something, and it doesn't have to be the picture that's being sent to the boy. It could say, this is just a picture for you to remind you who I am. The fourth thing is, and this is probably something Ilana could talk about, is maybe reevaluating what you're looking for. Maybe what you told people you're looking for is too narrow, and maybe you need to broaden it. So, like, for example, this guy who's like 6'2" told me that he's only going to date girls that are like 5'7" and taller. And, you know, if month after month it turns to 5'6" and 5'5" and 5'4", and now just any girl that's going to say yes, he's going to get, you know, he's going to go out with. So maybe just changing, just think about critically about what you've told people you're looking for, and make sure that it's something that, you know, make sure that you weren't pigeonholing yourself. And then the fifth thing, and this is really my favorite, is to get involved in a chesed that is co-ed. And do something that you're passionate about, that you're excited about, that you can mingle with a guy, you can, you know, see how they interact. And even if you don't meet someone, at least you have something that you can, you know, you feel good about yourself afterwards. And I find that that's really the best way. And I'm going to let someone else speak because now I've taken up all the time.
Dr. I love Mary. Those tips.
I really feel deprived that I didn't have Why You Connect when I was dating, because that's such a helpful way to sort of organize starting the process. So I think that what I would like to focus on here is not so much the logistics of how to get a shidduch dater to start chadchanim, but more emotional and mental readiness to start dating. So sometimes it's not so clear what it means to be ready to start dating, and I want to normalize that this happens differently for different people. So what worked for a friend or a family member is not maybe going to be your process when you get to the point where you think, okay, I think I'm ready to start this. But some of the things that you might want to look out for is sort of feeling content for the most part in who you are, having a strong sense of self, feeling that you can share that or at the very least communicate that with another person. It doesn't mean that we need to be like our perfect final version of ourselves. I think that we're sort of always working on ourselves. But having an idea of who you are and feeling like you can both communicate that to another person and share that with another person. And I think sometimes it happens without you realizing. Maybe you have a lot of friends who are in relationships and you didn't really consider that for yourself, but sort of hearing about their experiences, you think, you know, I think that this is something that I want right now. I think that this is something that I'm lacking, or that I notice would fill something in my life and add something really special. And sometimes it doesn't happen that way at all, and it can sort of be, you know, you're in college, it's a very transitional time for a lot of people, and feeling like I want to make moves in my life to feel more settled. And a serious relationship can really be a part of that. But again, I really want to normalize that this process happens differently for different people. And if you're not sure that you're ready, you can talk to people, you know, seek guidance, talk to a rabbi, a good friend. I'm going to say this a lot. I would caution against trying to involve a ton of friends in some of these situations, because it can be overwhelming to get like a lot of different feedback from a lot of different people. And suddenly it's way more opinions than you had starting out with, and it can feel even more confusing to know where to go. So a trusted friend, a parent, a mentor, and sort of share where you think you are. And the other piece, Monkey, just remind me when you sort of said, and Ilana can talk more about that. Can anyone help us out?
This is a test. Oh God, it's bio.
Oh yes, reevaluating. Yes, thank you. It's so late, I'm sorry. So I think that going into this process, it helps to have like some core values. These are the things that are really important to me in relationships in general, and also in hopefully a dating relationship. Don't add a ton of things to that list, because I think like Monkey was saying, that really can pigeonhole you. But have some things on that list that you really either don't want to compromise on, or don't feel that, or feel that these are the things that really you value, that you want to be a big part of your life going forward. And I would add to that that sometimes the things on those lists can be removed from that list when you actually start dating. Like starting off, even the things on those lists may not always be so concrete. So going in with some ideas about maybe what you want and what you value and what you think is important, but also being open to the fact that through dating, that list can change. Be open to learning more about yourself and what you want simply through the process of dating can be really helpful. So that's what I would say.
Yeah, Rabbi Simon.
Just repeat the question, please.
How do you start the process of shidduch dating?
How do you start the process for shidduch dating? Okay, it's a fantastic question. I think that the most beneficial way to start the process of dating is really to just work on ourselves, to really develop ourselves. You know, sometimes when we go through Chazal, interestingly, we find that Rivka Imenu was 3 years old when she got into the Parsha of Shiduchim. And we say to ourselves, it's impossible. How does that resonate? How does that work with us? It seems so far out there and so distant. But I think that that's a tremendous yisod. It's a tremendous idea to learn from. And that is whether she got married at three, or whether she started working on herself at the age of three to prepare herself for that day when she will be in the Parsha of Shiduchim. In other words, from the outset, from when we're children, we're constantly working on ourselves to prepare ourselves for that day. So now is the way we prepare ourselves for dating is to prepare ourselves, is to be making, is to work on ourselves as we prepare for this special time. You know, I was talking to a young man, and he wasn't yet dating, and he was read to a girl that perhaps had a little bit more experience than he had in shiduchim, and he was very concerned. He was very worried. He didn't think that they would be able to relate, especially that they were in different places, that she had much more experience in dating. And I said to him, I said, it's not true, because to me, what's dating? Dating is being a mensch. In other words, you're kind, you're considerate, you're thoughtful, you listen when the other person is speaking. In other words, these are basic midos that everyone should have been working on and developing throughout their many years. So the way to prepare for dating is to just prepare ourselves, to work on ourselves, to develop ourselves, to be the best possible people that we can be. And, you know, everything else, Amir Tzashem, you know, will take care of itself. But first and foremost, we have to figure out ways to become great people. And ultimately, we have those values and those midos tovos. That's really the best way to prepare it, and will also enhance our dating process. Because even if it doesn't work out with this person, but at least he's going to come back and say, you know what, she's such an amazing person. Like, you know, I think I have a great idea for her. She spoke, not necessarily to me, but she perhaps will speak to someone else. So just continue to develop, continue to work on ourselves, that hopefully we'll be great people, and our midos will help us throughout this process.
Thank you. And I think just to add on to this, what I would say is, well, thank you, I think those are all great ideas, but what I really think is important is for everyone, and this goes along, everyone has to be also their own shadchan. And I know that might sound like, what do you mean? She's a shadchan, you have to be your own shadchan. What does that mean? That means that you speak to your friends, you go away for Shabbos, you go to shul, you look over the mechitza, you're at a wedding. You need to also advocate for yourself, because this is the way the world is. You need to say to your friends, hey, do you know anyone for me? Or your cousin, or your aunt, or you're in shul. Again, you all, with all due respect, you all went to Marashat, you went to Moshavat, you might have gone to Frisch, you might have gone to whatever, Achva, I don't know, all these different programs, and you have cousins, you have brothers, you have uncles, you know males in your lives. I promise you, you all know males, so therefore, your friends also know them. So your friends, your parents, your Shabbos guests, anyone that you know, you can say like, hey, like, do you know anyone for me? And that is a great way of getting yourself out there. I know not everybody is comfortable with it, but sooner or later, like, it's kind of like, what's the big deal? Like, if my friend loves me, if my friend cares about me, then she'll be like, oh yeah, like, great, I just thought of this guy for you. Like, why not? Let's try it. So again, there's awesome shadchanim that we have and awesome people in our community. But again, you can be your own shadchan. Is that okay to say?
Yeah. We love it.
Right, exactly. That's the easy part. Okay, next question. What would you suggest if someone recently began dating and the first person suggested to them seems great, been going out for a while, but they still have doubts? They still have doubts if there might be someone better out there. By the way, these are your own words. These are not mine. These are actually your questions. So, because they have no one to compare it to since it was their first person. Okay. Did I interrupt the question? The question is, basically, they've been going out for a while and they still have doubts that there might be someone better out there. And I guess the second part of that is, talk about it. Okay, we'll go with that.
Okay,
you want to go first?
Okay. This has a very short answer. I actually took a course last summer with Rebbetzin Rivka Yudin, and she was giving a course to parents about dating, like teaching parents how to be good I don't know, parents to children who are dating. And actually, that was a question that I asked her, because I get asked that question a lot. So I said, in your opinion, you know, what if it's the first boy, that the first man that the girl's dating? And her answer was very clearly, that's a bracha. You know, as long as it fits what she's looking for, there's no reason to look elsewhere. You don't need to, you know, you don't need to overanalyze it. Just consider it a gift and say thank you, Hashem. And that was just, that was a perfect answer. So if it's the first boy and it fits everything you're looking for, you don't have to shop around, you know, like this is, it's a bracha. So.
Yes. When I read this question, what I sort of heard the question asking is, am I making a mistake if I don't date other people? Like, is it okay to just say this is it for me? And I think what I would really like to offer here is there's no way of knowing for sure what else is out there and if it's a better fit for you, which can, I think, seem very scary for some people. Like, there's no way of knowing, then how do I make any of these decisions? And I really want to encourage all of you to think about how you know yourselves. You know yourself probably more and better than you think you do. And so if something feels good, I don't know that it's always so helpful to question every single nuance about it. You know, when we get in our heads, we can get lost in there sometimes. I think that sometimes when you consider other people, it might seem like, well, this quality of this person seems like a better fit than the person I'm currently dating. That may be true, but perhaps you're compromising in another area with that person that you're not currently compromising on. And this sort of goes back to what I was saying earlier, is having some core values, again, not a ton, but a few sort of leading principles of like, these are the things that right now in my life are most important to me when I'm thinking about who I want to be with. And trying to find a person who is a good fit. I would really like to dispel the myth that there is a perfect person for us, because I'm not perfect. No one here is perfect. And so there isn't going to be a perfect person for you, but there's going to be a really, really good fit. And in that way, that is the perfect person for you. But that person will not be perfect, if that makes sense.
I think there's no one that's perfect, but someone's perfect for me.
Exactly. Yes.
Awesome. Okay, great. Again, just continuing this idea, this theme. So we obviously know that the Torah tells us that Yaakov was married to two sisters. He was married to Rachel and he was married to Leah. So the first person that he had set eyes upon was Rachel Imenu. And that was the one that he had loved so dearly, so much. It happens to be that for whatever reason, and this obviously was the way it was meant to be, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him a different wife first. But ultimately, his first and true love was Rachel. In other words, we can learn something very powerful from that idea, and that is that imagine for a moment Yaakov comes to Rachel, and they're dating, and they're going out. And Yaakov is pondering, perhaps someone might be better out there. I've never gone out with anyone else. All I know is Rachel. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes, and again, everything is great. Yaakov loves Rachel. He believes this is his basheret. But then HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him another wife first. And yet we still find that Leah, he didn't love Leah any better. He still loved Rachel the most. In other words, that's a very, very powerful idea. That it's very easy to assume that the grass is always greener on the other side. That something better is out there. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was teaching us through that very powerful story that you might think that there's someone that I'm going out with and I think I'm compatible with, but how do I know it's the one? Maybe there's something better. So ultimately, Yaakov is paired with that person that might be better, And then he comes and he realizes, obviously he always realized, but the Torah is telling us that he never lost that love for that first person that he had come and gone out with. So it's so easy to assume, make assumptions that the grass is greener, but we see from Yaakov Avinu, trust your instincts. In other words, his instinct was that Rachel was the one for him. And even when he experienced another person, ultimately speaking, his love was still there for his first wife. That was his true love. That was the one that he loved so very, very much. The answer is, and just to echo what our panelists have said, all of them, is that I can't say it as fancy as them, but at the end of the day, you know, this is what I tell Talmidim that I speak with. If you find 6 out of 10 midos or values or things that are important to you, 6 out of 10, you're batting 100, meaning you hit gold. That is a perfect score. Now again, each person has to figure out what are the 6 that are important and what are the 4 that are insignificant. So if 4 are really, I don't like, you know, the sweater that he's wearing, so that might be something that might diminish how you feel about him, but ultimately I imagine that would be some of the 4 that really are insignificant, and the other 6, like he's kind to, you know, the person, the doorman. You know, usually what I tell my students is the side that have the 6, which if you have those 6, you're batting 1,000. So usually those should be the midos of the halachta bidrachav, the midos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has. In other words, it's our job to emulate, to follow in his ways. In other words, that's the most meaningful type of midos, so the midos that Hashem possesses. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a racham, he's a compassionate person. So I think that part of that 6 should be compassion. And someone who's erech apayim, who's slow to anger, doesn't have a problem of kaz, you know. So all of those midos should be that. And if you have it, so someone else might also have it, but you found he has it, and you know it feels right. So you know it's always easy again to assume, but we see from Yaakov Avinu, ultimately you're going to come back to that person, that first one. It's not true. The grass isn't always greener on the other side.
I think that's what my take home from this question is, that the root of comparing and saying maybe there's something better out there is really the Yetzer Hara we're talking. Because that's like with everything in life. You know, maybe there's a better job, or maybe there's a better house, or maybe there's a better car, maybe there's a better sweater, maybe there's a better whatever. Like, you can't live your life always in the shadows of something better. You have to be Sameach B'Chelko. You have to see what's in front of you. You have to see what you're happy with. You have to analyze what's in front of you. And letting your mind wander onto other things is just a distraction. And again, it's a way of life. It's something that you need to internalize, not only for this specific question, and often, for those of you who I speak to, you hear me say often, this is a life lesson. This is not just about dating. This is something that you should take with you wherever you go, that you shouldn't be comparing, and you shouldn't be looking always at your friends and always at, like, he is this and he is that, or that guy is this, or I always thought this. Like, no, you focus on what's in front of you. You focus on the important things, and obviously, you know, hopefully you know what the important things are, and not the nourish type of the things that are important. And then everything in your life, I think, will be a lot smoother. Okay. So we see eye to eye on these things. Okay. Okay. How do you know if the person you are dating is the one? Is there a specific feeling or aha moment you should have? How important and realistic is it to be head over heels, or does love get stronger with time?
I can start with this one. This is a hard question. I think that people experience relationships in different ways. And for some people, they may have an aha moment. And they may have the type of chemistry that makes them feel that they're head over heels. And for other people, it may not exactly develop like that. That relationship is no less significant, meaningful, or important than the first kind. So sometimes this is about personality differences and just how, in general, you connect with other people. Some people connect very quickly, deeply, intensely, and other people need a little more time. So I really want to kind of normalize that relationships develop in all sorts of ways, and there, I don't think that there is like a rubric, you must have XYZ. And maybe, Malky, you feel differently. But I think that we need to be open to our unique individual differences and say it's okay if my process looks different. Again, as long as I'm feeling connected and I'm feeling that this is deep and meaningful and I'm growing in this and I like it and it's good and I have 6 out of 10 or whatever the number is. I think what I also want to add here is that deciding to marry somebody is a decision. You are deciding to do it. Hopefully people don't fall into it and just sort of like get there. Everyone makes a choice at that point. I want to spend my life with this person. Not everyone experiences that decision in the same way. So for some people, it may seem so seamless and easy. I don't even need to think about this. Of course, I want to marry this person. And for other people, maybe not. Again, no less valid, no less significant or meaningful of a relationship.
Yeah, the only thing that I'll add is just from talking to, you know, women and men and, you know, when they're at that stage is that you don't really know 100%. At some point, you just, you know, you say, I've hit a glass ceiling. Like, at this point, at this level of dating, I'm not going to get to know the person better. I feel comfortable. I like how this feels, you know, and then you just take the jump. Like they say, Shidduchim is like compared to Kriyas Yamsuf, and Nachshon Ben Aminadab had to step into the water before it split. You know, sometimes you just have to take the Nachshon jump. That's what I tell the girls. You know, it's time for the Nachshon jump. And then you'll, you know, that's just, I don't think that there's any way of being 100% sure. You just, everything feels right, you make the decision. So, that's it.
Yeah, excellent. Great job. But you know, the truth of the matter is the you know, the ultimate relationship is the relationship that that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to and has with Bnei Yisrael, and that relationship has been developed over time and years, and you know, Yetzias Mitzrayim was part of that developing of the relationship. We had to get rid of certain sediments and deficiencies before we came to the chuppah, which was Har Sinai. So, you know, for the people that have those sparks, you know, that's awesome and that's great. And obviously, we hope that there are people that you're speaking with just to make sure that things are grounded and things are focused, and you're also thinking of it, you know, intellectually as well, besides emotionally. It's easy to get swept up in the moment. One of the things that I try to, you know, guide my students with is that when you're going out and you're dating, you should have an ayin ra. You should look a little bit critically. You know, in other words, it's like when you buy a diamond. When you're looking to buy a diamond, you take the magnifying glass and, you know, you're looking to make sure it's just perfect, and how much more so, you know, your future, your life, it really depends upon this decision. It has to be done in a critical way. Obviously, as well, you want to be open and embrace the fact that you're going out with this person, but there has to be an element of critical thinking. And then once you get married, and, you know, so now it's no longer an ayin ra, but it's an ayin tova. You look and always give the benefit of the doubt. But so for those people that have that epiphany instantly, that's amazing. Again, speak with people to keep you grounded. But for those people that, you know, it's a process, well, that's also normal, because, again, we try to emulate, and everything that we find in the Torah, like we've said until now, is there to guide us. It's practical for us today. So when we're thinking about relationships, we have to study, you know, the parsha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael leading up to the Chuppah, leading up to Har Sinai. It comes with challenges, and it comes with different moments, and there's some times that are more challenging than others, and there are other times that are more beautiful than others. So, you know, there's no right or wrong, and as long as you have people to speak with and to guide you, and to help you along this process, I think that in Yirtzeh Hashem, with Siyata Deshmaya and taking the plunge, ultimately you'll see the fruits of your labor.
So what I would just like add on here is that I feel like this is the next piece of like the question before. The question before, we were saying, how do we know if there's not someone better? And we were just saying the grass is greener on the other side and comparing. So I can't tell you how many times girls are talking to me and they're saying, but my friend knew him on the second date. And the question is, again, by the way, are we supposed to have an aha moment? How do we know? So when you're comparing yourself to your friends and you hear these stories of like, oh, I knew on the fourth date, or, you know, he swept me off my feet and it was so exciting and we're getting engaged after two dates and, you know, all these things. So what I would tell you is that two things. What I would tell you is that those are the only stories that you're hearing. You're not hearing about the girls that date for 3 months and aren't sure, and they're up and down and backwards and forwards, and those stories don't get glorified. Those stories don't pass around. Those stories aren't like, no one's saying about their boyfriends, like, I'm not really sure about him, like, everyone should know. So, like, those are private things, and those are things that obviously people keep to themselves for good reason. But the stories that get glorified and the stories that, like, everybody latches onto are the stories that are, like, you know, romantic and, you know, exciting and, you know, a lot of, like, fanfare. But I would tell you the majority of people are not like that, and that's not really reality. And I would also tell people, like, come out of the Disney movie, because that's not the way life is. Life is hard. Life is ups and downs. You're dealing with serious things. You're dealing with a lot of serious ramifications. You know, here you are. You're choosing your future husband. You're choosing the father of your children. You're choosing the father of your children. So this is a big deal. This is not just like your boyfriend that, like, you're, you know, I don't know, you'll see what happens. These are big decisions. So I wouldn't get caught up in the stories. I wouldn't get caught up in the fanfare or the Disney stories that you're hearing or that we grew up on. This is real life. So part of me is like, when I hear these stories, I'm kind of like, oh, that's so great, but like, what's the real story? Or like, what's the real story for most of us?
Right, Rachel, I'll add in that sometimes I hear these stories and I'm like, someone's rewriting history here, because I knew at the beginning, I spoke to them after each date, and now they're saying that on the second date they knew it was the right, you know, it was the best person for them, and they knew they were going to marry that person. I spoke to them after that second date, you know. So right. A lot of times it's a rewritten version of how it actually happened.
It is.
So.
It is. And again, that's like the people that say, like, I don't study and I got 100. We don't believe those things. You know, there are certain things that, like, again, I think that, you know, that goes along with also some people's personalities. Some people are impulsive, and some people are just, you know, get carried away. And, you know, I think that that's not everybody, and everybody has to know themselves. If you're a different personality, that story is not going to be you. So I guess my point is really that even though you may hear these stories, you have to come back to reality for yourself and realize, like, that's not the norm, and that's not what you should be comparing yourself to. Like, in terms of having aha moments or head over heels or doing jumping jacks, like, that's not actually, like, reality. Okay. Next question. Everyone has flaws. So how do you know when something is actually problematic or something you should try not to focus on?
I can take this one first. So I love how the question started. Everyone has flaws. We need to highlight and bold and underline this. Everyone here has flaws. And sometimes it's about determining whether you can live with those flaws. And I think often we need help making that decision. Of course, it depends what, I'm going to add a word in here, the perceived flaws are, because sometimes we see a flaw, but maybe it's not really a flaw. Sometimes we need help and we need guidance. I think in general, it's sometimes helpful to talk these things out, because I can say this just from being in my profession. A lot of times, another person can hear what you're saying that you're not, like, hear something in what you're saying that you don't even realize you're saying. And when they reflect it back to you, it can bring clarity. Like, oh, I didn't realize, now that I'm talking it out, I didn't realize that that's what I was thinking about. If something is potentially problematic, could this be a red flag? That's definitely the time to seek guidance from a professional, from a rabbi, from a mentor. Sometimes, you know, I don't expect everyone in this room to have that kind of thorough education to know exactly what is a problem, what is it going to look like. So get help in learning more about it and trying to understand what those things are. I also like to do this in my work here at the counseling center, is sort of like a visualization exercise. So knowing the person that you're dating as they are, if you close your eyes and you sort of like fast forward 5 or 10 years, what is like a Wednesday night at 9 o'clock look like? You know, you might be here giving a, you know, a talk. what is like a Shabbat look like? What does a social experience look like? And how might those flaws, perceived flaws, manifest in each of those situations? And how do I feel about that? Sometimes you kind of need to imagine like the ultimate part of the relationship and not so much the dating piece of it. The other thing I want to add is if you're at a serious stage in the relationship and this is coming up, if you haven't already done so, you might want to speak directly to your partner about your concerns or ask questions. It's possible that the person you're dating can give you a context that you didn't have before that maybe changes the landscape a little bit. Like, oh, okay, I get that now. From the outside, it looked different, but as you're explaining it, like, I wouldn't have considered that piece of it. Or can just give you more information that can help you decide for yourself, again, is this a perceived flaw that I can be okay with? So I think that that's what I would add. But definitely seek guidance if it feels like it could be more serious or in that like red flag, potential red flag territory.
First of all, I love that. Talk to the person that you're dating about about your worries. That's very helpful sometimes because, you know, like Ilana said, they could say, yes, I know that that's something that I'm working on, or what are you talking about? I don't do that. And that gives you a lot of understanding of what you're dealing with. So I love that. Often people will come to me and I'll say, why are you talking to me? Like, talk to the person that you're in a relationship with. And the other thing that I'll talk about is, you know, this mentor that you should be speaking to about the perceived flaws should be a person that knows you well. Not to just, you know, like you're selecting someone to help you through the dating process who hopefully has relationship experience, but also has gotten to know you. So they can kind of like flesh out, you know, because sometimes when people call like a random rabbi and just ask a question and he doesn't know who you are and what you're all about and what your strengths and weaknesses are, you know, or a rebbetzin or a, you know, a teacher, and they're not necessarily giving you good advice for you. Like, I trust that they're giving good advice in what they think, but it's not your advice. So, you know, because everyone has flaws, and someone that knows you well will understand what flaws you can live with. And the other side of it is, I always tell people, you know, it's a good idea to make a list when you're dating someone, and I tell this to every person you're dating. Make a list of what's great about them, their positive attributes, what you're seeing in them. Make a list of their flaws. But on the other side of the page, make a list of your positive attributes, what you bring to the relationship, your great midos, and your flaws. Because if they can handle your flaws, and only you know all your flaws, but if you see that they can handle that, that's something to consider. You know, when you're looking at they're always late and don't they care about me, and you know, but you also have a tendency for, I don't know, you know, you're so disorganized and they go with the flow and they don't mind. You know, you kind of just have to do that as well. Look at your own flaws, and that goes with getting to know yourself. But that's always helpful. Just, okay. Done.
I just want to add, I think you both hit it on a point as you've done throughout the night. But I just want to say that, you know, we're so excited that we're going out with someone. We might have found someone that shares a lot of the qualities, or has or possesses many of the qualities that we're looking for. And it's so easy to just glance over the aspects of him that I don't really like, or I don't, just doesn't sit well with me. So the only thing that I could really, I would really love to stress is if you feel it, like, don't just negate it. If there's something that's not sitting well with you, I mean, it's probably for a good reason. In other words, you know yourself, and your neshama has lived with you for many, many years, and you just know what, you know, what sits right. It's like, you know, it's just to give it a context. In other words, like, you have a palate, you know what tastes right to you, and we don't go back to the same restaurant over and over again if I'm getting sick time and time again. Oh, you know what, next time is going to be different. Or the next time is going to be different. You know, the next time I'm not going to get sick. That happens to be, I have a problem, I do that. You know? I mean, you ask my wife, I'm like, I think I love peanut butter. And I grew up, I love peanut butter. And I think as I got older, I started developing an allergy, because every time I eat peanut butter, I was sick for days. And so what do I do? Once the days are up, I start eating it again. So, you know, we have to...
Don't do as he does.
Yes. Don't do as I do, but I guess do as I say, right, which is awesome. I'm a wonderful role model. But, you know, the truth of the matter is if you feel it, like, don't go back next time. And no, it's going to be okay. This time it's going to be different. Just so happy that I found someone who's nice to me, you know, 83% of the time. Like, that might be good for like a chemistry test or a biology exam, but it's not really good when you're
painting again.
Yeah. You know, it's not really, you know, the best when you're looking for someone. In other words, you deserve, you know, someone who, again, that 6 out of 10, like those are very, very important, that, as far as I'm concerned, are non-negotiable. And it doesn't just mean like 80% of the time. You know, it really has so, and there's only so much that a person could hide his, you know, his true essence. So look out for that. Don't squash it. Don't negate it. Don't say it's not really an issue. If it doesn't sit right, assume it's something that is not right.
No, I think someone once told me that while you're dating, you keep both eyes open. And once you get married, you have one eye open and one eye closed. I think I've said that before. So that's I think what we mean. But the other thing that I would say is that I think when you're dating someone, and Baruch Hashem, I've spoken to a lot of girls, I think it's important to separate what is important and what is not. So many, I've had girls come in and say, you know, I really thought I'd be dating someone taller. Okay, but is that going to affect him being a husband? You know what I'm saying? Like, you have to kind of, like, check yourself every once in a while and say, like, okay, but is that important? Or, like, I don't really love the way he dresses. Like, okay, that can be changed. You have to really have honest conversations with yourself and say, like, is it an anger problem? Is it a kindness problem? Is it a considerate problem? Is he sensitive? Like, those are the things, obviously, that are important. You know, if you thought that, you know, and then there's some things that are gray. Someone thought she'd marry someone who was more outgoing. Okay, so then you have to say, like, is this something that's important or not to me? What is the nafkamina? What does it mean for our life? Like, so at the Shabbos table, he's not going to be, like, standing on the table? Like, is he not going to be, like, I don't know, doing the Hora? Like, that's okay. You know, you have to see, like, majority of your time, you're with each other. You're not in, like, you know, major social settings. So the important thing, I think, what I'm saying is that you kind of have to brush away what's not important if when you're dating someone, and really focus again on what the important things are. How he will be a good father, and will he be a good husband? And, you know, obviously you're entitled to have your own specifications, but I think people get caught up in it, and people, like, it's a distraction. It's not important. You know, what shoes he's wearing, what belt he's wearing, what sheer he's in, what yarmulke he's wearing, what color shirt. Like, you know, I think that you have to really kind of focus on what does it mean for me, and what kind of person is he, and how are we together? Okay. Okay. We'll get to work. A few few more questions. Okay. How much should looks matter when dating? If you are not attracted to a guy at the beginning, how long should you give it to get attracted to him before breaking it off?
Okay. So I guess we'll start with, you know, physical attraction is definitely very psychological, and Ilana will speak about that. And, you know, so I often hear a woman say to me something like, you know, when I walk with him, I'm not so sure that I'm attracted. And I try to, like, move the woman away from that line of thinking and just say, like, do you generally enjoy being in his presence? And if you do, that's a really great sign. And if someone says that they don't really enjoy being with that person, I'm not pushing that relationship at all. So I once went to this coaching seminar, like a dating coaching seminar, and I heard this yesod that I really thought was very meaningful. And it's that guys work from the outside in. So basically, if she looks good on the outside, they're going to develop the inside. They don't need the inside in order to develop the outside feelings. You know, once everything is good on the outside, they can work on feeling the emotional connection. But girls work the other way, and they work from the inside out. First, we need to feel connected, and then the outside becomes appealing to us. So commonly, you know, girls will say, you know, I'm not sure if I'm attracted. But once you start admiring the character traits of the person and you start feeling emotionally connected, you're drawn to the whole person, and then the outside starts to match the inside. And, you know, but I'm saying this, if the outside is still bothering her after really getting to know the person's true essence, then that's not a good relationship. That's not okay, because attraction really needs to be there. And like Rabbi Simon said, you shouldn't be pushing something away that's really nagging at you. And if you... just from a very practical standpoint, if you want to know, you know, feet on the ground, like what I've seen from talking to people after dates, I'm talking about from a woman's standpoint, I've definitely seen it take like up to 8 dates for a girl to tell me, you know, now I'm feeling attracted. And when I was talking to my to another shadchan at YU Connects, Mindy Eisenman, she told me, I've seen it take months. So I personally haven't seen that attraction develop after months, but I do believe her because she has a lot more experience than I do. But to me, 8 dates is when, you know, I usually, you know that person really well. And the one thing that I would like to caution you and kind of like keep this in the back of your mind, what I've seen is that if a feelings of attraction go south, like in the middle of the relationship. So if you're, you know, totally attracted, everything's going well, and all of a sudden you're like, wait, I don't think I'm attracted anymore. I can't wait the way, like, I don't like the way he chews. He's got this unibrow that I can't stand looking at anymore. That often to me is a sign of anxiety. And that's your subconscious or, you know, telling you that, wait, I'm going to try to find something wrong with this situation. And when I hear that specific thing, so you can kind of look out for it, I'll refer them to speak to, you know, a professional and just say, like, this is just some, like, a point that always reminds me, this is a time, you know, this is beyond me. You need to speak to someone with some training and just make sure that this is not coming from a place of anxiety, and that can help you deal with that, so...
Yes, I love that. I do think that happens in so many other areas of our life that, you know, if you like have a disagreement with somebody and then suddenly you're like more annoyed at other things that they do that maybe never bothered you before, you're like not in a good place in a relationship. So that's not necessarily saying the things that they're doing are bothersome, but maybe there's something larger going on here. Like I'm nervous or I'm anxious about the relationship. I think... I actually work uptown mostly, and I'm only here one day a week, so I would like to offer the male perspective from the guys that I see at the counseling center, and I will tell you, I don't recall this question ever coming up. Maybe a handful of times, but it's not so common. Take that for what you will. I think it has a lot to do with what Malki was sharing, and I think there could be something to that. You know, if professionally, I think that it's hard for attraction, physical attraction, to grow from like a nothing. Like, I'm not at all attracted physically to this person. But that doesn't mean that there aren't exceptions to that case. So I think what I would like to talk about here are kind of like a few ways to develop that deeper connection, you know, in getting to know the person, and then seeing if the attraction grows from that. This list is not exhaustive, but these are just some of the bigger things that I see in the counseling center. So one is just having an open and honest communication with the other person. These are all, by the way, methods to sort of like forge a deeper connection and then seeing if the attraction can grow. Another one is being curious in getting to know the other person, like learning about them. And by the way, I don't think that that stops. It shouldn't stop with dating. You should spend your whole life with a person, you know, staying curious, continuing to learn about them. That really helps people connect on a deep level. And I also think investing and committing to the development of the relationship itself, like the couple, you know, like spending time together as a couple, growing as a couple when you maybe need to grow, working on things as a couple, which relates back to what we were saying earlier, if there's a big issue, talking to the person about it. I think that if you really put in your hishtagla, like your effort in sort of trying to grow the relationship in all these other ways and the attraction still maybe isn't there, the short answer is I think that can be a good reason to end it. You know, you need to, on a base level, be physically attracted to a romantic partner. It's an important part. Physical intimacy is an important part of a romantic relationship and ultimately a marriage. But I do think that we need to put in our effort sometimes to see if getting to know the person and feeling more connected to them on a deeper level can help facilitate that attraction on all those different levels.
I love what you both said, especially with the inner and outer in terms of physical attraction, in terms of anxiety and everything that was said. It's awesome. Just to piggyback and I think really just to echo, I don't really need to answer anything that wasn't already said by both of you. You know, my students come and they tell me that, you know, she's just not my look. So, you know, I tell them, well, you know, you're clearly suggesting that she is an attractive person, just not your look. So the more you spend with her and the more you get to know her, so she'll start being more of your look. And many times, ultimately, that's what happens, where the more you get to know the person, the more you appreciate the person, the more they become your look. And their look grows on you. And so, you know, I think as well that, you know, not my look. I imagine it could be, you know, girls, women say that as well, I think. And I think that if objectively someone finds them attractive, so they might not be your look, but if you get to know them, you know, ultimately you'll come and grow to, you know, like that look. And if not, as you both said, then it's probably not your basheret, and it's time to pass him along to your friend.
Yeah. And I would say that to me, when I think of attraction, I hate to say this, I don't think of looks. I think obviously with the baseline, someone doesn't have three eyes or five heads, but I'm saying in normal, regular society or in our world, usually someone's personality shines through stronger than their looks. You know, after a while, you don't even see someone's face. You see their personality, you see their neshama, you see how awesome they are, you see everything else. And at a certain point, I mean, we all know, like everyone, not everyone, but some people get bald and fat, and girls get, you know, they, like, everyone changes. So the looks isn't what's lasting. It doesn't make a difference. It's what's inside. It's what they represent. It's what, how you are together. It's your chemistry. Those are the lasting things. And it's not, attraction, I guess, to me, I mean, obviously I haven't dated in a while, but I'm saying attraction is not just skin deep. It can't be. It can't be, because that's not, that doesn't help a relationship. That may be a starting point. But again, when you date someone and you get to know them, their whole essence shines through. So I guess to me, I'm more of like okay, looks like, how do you know what your look is? I don't know, did Hashem tell you? Like, you don't know what you're supposed to be with. You have to give it a chance. Okay, we have two more questions. And so just bear with us. Okay. How important is it for you and your partner to be the same hashkafa? What if you like someone but he's not as religious as you are?
Okay. That's a great question. I think that it is important. Because, you know, when you're dating right now, so it doesn't really manifest itself acutely because there are no real nafkaminas, there's no practical differences whatsoever. His yarmulke is exhibits that he has one type of hashkafa, or the shirt that he's wearing exhibits he has another type of hashkafa. So right now, lamaisa today, hashkafos, they don't really manifest itself. But as you go in life, it manifests itself in the type of community you're going to want to live in, the type of community you're going to want to raise your children in, the type of schools you're going to want to send your children to, and it really can create, I think, shalom bayis issues if you're not on the same page, you're not aligned. Now, again, that's just with everything being equal. It also could be, though, that let's say you're a certain hashkafa. Let's say, for argument's sake, because it really, in other words, you know, let's say a person is more to the right, and the person they're going out with is not as far to the right. So it could very well be that the person that you're going out with, there's something in him that tells you that this is someone that has only scratched the surface. He's a Ben Aliyah. He's always looking to grow. You can just see that he's always looking to attain, to grow, to gain more. So even though he's not where you are hashkafically or religiously, but you see that he's someone that is willing to go along for the ride. He's excited about it. And again, that's also a risk. But you know, in life, that's what we do. We get all our data and we make risks. There's nothing that's a given. Even someone who is, you know, more, you know, than you. You know, sometimes they go, you know, it's a yo-yo and they go to become less. So life is always a risk. Who knows what they're going to be like in 5 years, in 10 years. But just with everything being equal, I think that it is important, obviously, within a range. No one's ever alike. But there has to be, you know, a basic commonality in hashkafa, or else long-term it could have, you know, potential shalom bayis ramifications. But then again, at the same time, again, you have to see where they are and what type of people you potentially see them as, and so forth and so on.
Okay. So just to echo what the rabbi said, that definitely being on the same page of, you know, and hashkafically is important. But I always say you have to be in the same parsha, not necessarily on the same pasuk. You kind of have to realize that hashkafa is fluid and there's give and take. It doesn't always, you don't always stay in the same camp. It evolves. The man, the boy, the guy, whatever we're calling him, has to be a Ben Aliyah. He has to be growing in the right direction. He has to be, you know, you have to be going in the same direction. When you see someone who's going in the opposite direction from you, that's obviously not the right way to be going. But sometimes I have to explain the differences, and this happens more often when I'm speaking to girls than to boys, but I have to explain the difference between girls and boys in terms of their natural inclination. And this is just a generalization, but generally speaking, you know, women will complain to me sometimes like, the guy's not spiritual enough. And one girl said to me, I asked him what his relationship with Hashem is, and he had no idea what I was talking about. And like, he didn't even understand my question. And I just have to explain that, like, women are, tend to be, not always, but sometimes are, more spiritual. For better or for worse, it's just, they're just different. It's, you know, we have different mitzvos, and it's a balance. Men and women balance each other out. And men might relate to their Yiddishkeit in tefillah or in learning, and women might relate to their Yiddishkeit, you know, through our feelings, through thinking about Hashem, through hashgacha pratis stories, you know, and again, totally generalizing, but because he's not thinking about his relationship with Hashem and can't verbalize it to you and express it to you, it doesn't mean that he's less than you. So that's just kind of something that you have to keep in mind. And, you know, as long as he's just going in the same direction, you know, that's what you're looking for. And you just have to recognize that his strengths in Hashgacha might be different than yours.
So. I don't have a lot to add. Those were really thorough answers. I guess I would just go back to something I mentioned earlier, is kind of using that visualization exercise, seeing him as he is right now at the religious level that he is, fast forwarding however many years, what does that look like for you and your family? And is that okay? If it doesn't feel like it's okay, there's something to think about and explore there. If it feels like that could be okay, then maybe you're not as far away as you initially thought you were. So sometimes trying to imagine what do chagim look like? What does like a family event look like? You know, if he needs help getting up for minyan every day now, are you going to become the person that does that for him? Are you okay with that? And again, I think like Rabbi Semet was saying, you know, hashkafa can really... it can change over the course of an individual's lifetime, but also the couple's hashkafa can change. So you can only make a decision, the best decision that you can make in that moment with the information that you have at the time. We can't hope to change people, expect them to change. We sort of have to look at what's in front of us and try to make as an informed decision as we can. I am okay with this, knowing that this might move. That's what I would add.
Well said. Last question. How do we balance the hishtadlut required in finding a ben zug and the emunah needed to trust that Hashem knows what's right?
Honestly,
I don't feel I needed to be here tonight. You guys are great. You guys are really great. I think that the answer is both. In other words, we put in our hishtadlus, like Rachel had said earlier, you go and you try to meet sisters, brothers, parents, friends, shul, machitza, shachanim,
weddings.
You put in all of your hishtadlus. But that's only because HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us to put in our hishtadlus. In other words, you know, it's like I speak sometimes to parents of people that are looking for shiduchim, and they're what's going to be? How is my child going to find their shidduch? And I tell them, I said, you know who's going to find your shidduch? They're like, you know, the rabbi, the shadchan, the friend. I said, no. She says, well, who's going to find it? I said, you're going to find your daughter or your son shidduch, because you're going to get up and you're going to be mispalel and you're going to cry and you're going to bake the challahs and you're going to do all of that. That will ultimately bring your child their zivug. And it's not going to be me. It's not going to be the shadchan. I said, I don't think for a moment that you know, me speaking to people, I'm the one that does the shidduch. It's not true. And Baruch Hashem, Hashem has been very kind that we have been able to have a yad, a hand in that. But ultimately, it's the parents' tears. It's your own tears. You're going to make your own shidduchim. You're going to be mispalel to Hashem. In other words, that's the greatest form of hishtadlus besides meeting all the shadchanim and all of that. It's tefillah. In other words, you know, Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us the koach of tefillah, and the koach of tefillah can change everything. It is a game changer. It's a lifesaver. You know, the Gemara comes and tells us that kashas zivugim kriyas yamsuf, that zivugim, that shiduchim is as difficult as kriyas yamsuf. Now, what's the connection? What's Kodesh Baruch Hu trying to teach us? So I think that the answer is obvious, because we know that when Klal Yisrael encountered the Yam Suf and they saw in front of them the Yam Suf, and the side of them they saw the Chayos Rose, the wild beast, and behind them they saw the Mitzrim. So what does the Torah tell us about Yitzhak Hashem? that they davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's the message? The message is that ultimately speaking, when we're encountering the parsha of Kriyas Yamsav of Zivugim, again, Chazal make that connection between both of them. So what we do is Vayitzak Lel Hashem, we dive into Hashem. So we put in all of our ishtalos, and we have to do all of that. Because we don't, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu mandates. He tells us, this is what you need to do. But at the end of the day, don't think that the tefillah is no less of a ishtadlus. That the parents' tefillos are no less of a ishtadlus. The segulos are no less of a ishtadlus. And the mirtz Hashem, with all of that, because that's the world we live in. We live in the world of guf and neshama and ishtadlus and bitachon. Emir Tz Hashem, we'll be zochet to find our basheret. So we need both of them, but the greatest ishtadlus is ultimately the power, the koach of tefillah. And Emir Tz Hashem, through all of our tefillos, and I'm sure, you know, Rachel has said this countless, numerous times, that, you know, or, you know, you daven for your friend, and your friend will daven for you. Again, this is what Chazal teach us, that ultimately we you daven for someone else, that ultimately, you know, you'll be zoche to see the peros as well. So, you know, Emir Hashem, through your tefillos for each other and yourselves, Emir Hashem, we'll all be zoche to build that bias nemun. Bisrael. I feel like every speech of Shidduchim has to have bias down with Bisrael. So I thought, why not just throw it in right now?
I have nothing to add. That was...
No, that's a great ending. Perfect.
So I have one more thing and everybody knows that I do this at every single daily panel that we have, and I give everybody homework. Okay, this is your homework for tonight. Everybody, go back to your dorm, go back to your room, think of 3 Shidduchim, and work on it tonight and tomorrow. If everybody here does that, and then their roommates do it, and everybody does it, believe me, we will have a lot more girls going out, shidduchim, zivugim, and everybody will be mishtatev in everybody's simcha. So this is your homework. Everybody is charged tonight. Remember, I just said you all know people from Morisha, Moshava, Frish, Shul, weddings. Like you have brothers, you have cousins, you have uncles. You all have the guys you all have. So now use them all. Get them. They're back there somewhere. You know them. Think about them. You might not be close with them or maybe your friend's brother, but they exist. So use them. Go back. This is your homework. You can all report to me tomorrow that you made 3 shidduchim, and I'll be very happy.
No pressure.
No pressure, right? You have to daven, and then you also have to do this. So thank you very much, everyone. Thank you for your time. If you have any questions...
Can I say one more thing, if you don't mind, Rachel?
Fine.
Just one last thing. You know, never, or at least try not, unless it's totally out of whack, like, don't negate a shidduch. I don't think it's going to work. In other words, how do we know? In other words, we have had a yad in shidduchim where, I mean, I don't even know the other person, honestly. Like, it's just, in other words, you know, it sounds good. Hashem gives you a siyata d'shmaya. Like, you never know. How do we know? I don't think it's a good idea. Who said? In other words, I'm even saying when someone else suggests another person for your friend, I don't think it's a good idea. So you got something into their head that it's not a good idea, but that might have been their zivug. And also, you know, in other words, be open. Be open to suggestions for other people. You never know. They didn't go to the same schools. They didn't go to this. Okay, so be open, be expansive for yourselves, and also for, you know, for others as well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts people together. We have very, very little to do in this whole process. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And again, we're all available, all accessible.
right?
Oh, yeah. On March 9th, is that what I said, Dave, that I said? I think it's Wednesday, March 9th. YU Connects was going to be coming down to Stern. So if you would like to schedule a meeting, in addition to your friends and over the mechitza and as part of your hishtablos, you can email yuconnects@yu.edu and they'll set up a meeting, you know, with...
Maybe we'll send something out.
Okay, we'll send something out. Never mind. You don't have to remember anything. Perfect.
Okay. Thank you very much, everyone. Have a great night. I want to hear from everyone tomorrow.
Michelle.